You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
I do not pretend to understand the political intricacies of what is going on in the Middle East, especially when it involves our old foe, sometimes frenemy, ally, Russia. But I would like to understand it in the context of the religious angle, which is something I do not find in the coverage. You can find out if you are willing to sit down and read the stories and the articles, what's happening politically, but religiously, there's just a big empty space there in the journalism. Why is that? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about media coverage of religious ties between Russia and Syria, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
We have talked for years about how the press in America, when covering stories here, domestic stories, miss the religion angle. But why do they fail to notice it when they're covering news abroad when, as you point out, you got to try to not notice the religion angle in some of these stories?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'm afraid that I do not have a simple answer for you. My experience is that international coverage of religion is often a lot better in that it isn't rooted in the whole kind of American sexual revolution, culture wars, evangelicals who voted for Trump template. So you've got reporters that are kind of, they're out of their comfort zone in some cases, so they kind of start stories fresh and treat them like ordinary journalism. And frequently that can lead to really, really good coverage. I think we probably praise the international desk of the Washington Post and the New York Times more for their coverage of religion news than we do say the political desk of those same newspapers here in America. There's no consistent rhyme or rule to this. Let me give you an example. In Hindu culture and in India right now, you have a tremendous amount of issues related to the role of women and to the treatment of women in Indian culture. Listeners may remember a series of horrible headlines in recent years over things about bride burnings and the rape and sexual assault of women in Indian culture, and a bunch of other stuff. Now, on one level, that's a typical kind of Me Too horror story involving the treatment of women. However, very rarely do American reporters probe into the religious undertows of that. I mean, in terms of what caste are these women in? I mean, are the police who are refusing to investigating of a different caste within the structures of Hindu culture? Or do you have, is this an expression of kind of warfare between Muslims and Hindus? Sometimes you have the assaults on Christians that are actually baited on the current Hindu government of India being very hostile to Christianity. So you can get into some pretty heated issues, but a lot of international coverage, to me, the religion is handled better, especially if they're being very careful, and I would say justifiably so, when covering issues within Islam, you know, and other world religions. And what you have there is the good side of an old problem, which is when reporters are not sure that they understand an issue, they often are much more careful to interview people on both sides of an issue, and they kind of start from scratch and work their way up. And that can be a problem. At the same time, it can be good in that there's a kind of a humility there. Sometimes the problems you have is when reporters think they understand a story, and they think they understand who the good guys are and the bad guys are, and they start with all of those assumptions intact. To me, what's especially interesting, and of course, this is all very personal to me, as someone who 21 years ago converted into the Church of Antioch, which is based, the Patriarchate, even though there are American churches and an American metropolitan and, you know, and a structure here in America, we still are related, or that church is related to the old country, as people would say. And the patriarch of the Antiochian church resides quite literally on the street called Straight in Damascus. In fact, if you write Patriarch John, street called Straight, Damascus, Syria, the letter will get to him. So, I mean, when you've got people living in addresses with New Testament references, you know, things have been there for a while. I've been intrigued with two questions, and this affects several posts that have been done recently because it affects the Islamic State and what we have gone through in the last 10 years or so with the rise of the Islamic State and many of the horrors that unfolded with it. I've always been intrigued why American Christians, especially evangelical Protestant Christians, are not more intrigued or interested in the fate of the ancient Christian churches of the Middle East. A friend of mine, the religious liberty scholar Paul Marshall, wrote a book about this quite some time ago. It was one of the books that helped start debates about religious liberty and persecution in the Middle East. It was a book called Their Blood Cries Out. And Paul made an observation that many Protestants have an eschatology that makes them much more interested in Israel, you know, and in the future of the Middle East, that it's almost kind of an inconvenience that these ancient and to Protestants very strange looking churches have actually been sitting in places like Nazareth and Bethlehem and Jerusalem and Damascus and Alexandria, Istanbul. I mean, that you have Christians with roots there that literally go back to Pentecost and shortly thereafter. Now, it's a double problem in that a lot of Americans don't seem to know that. And at the same time, that means that often American reporters don't have much knowledge either or much of an incentive to cover that. Does that make any sense? It's like a double problem. It's a problem with readers as well as it is a problem with reporters. You may have noticed recently that a lot, and I thank them for this, a lot of evangelicals hit the roof when Donald Trump did his about-face on the Kurdish forces in northern Syria. And there were, at least at the leadership level, that leaders would say within the Southern Baptist Convention or ministries related to the Graham family and everything else, various legacies of Billy Graham, you had people protesting. I mean, that in effect they were letting Turkish troops pour into an area where, in addition to the Kurdish allies of the United States, you had lots of religious minorities of all kinds, including Catholic and Orthodox Christians with ancient lineage. And, you know, it could have turned into a bloodbath, which then brings us to Russia rushing into the void there to try to help stop all of that. And once again, Russia emerges, and I don't think this is a good thing for America, Russia emerges as the defender of the ancient Christian communities in the Middle East for reasons that make both geopolitical sense, but at the same time, it doesn't take a big leap to realize that whatever you think of Vladimir Putin, and I know lots of Russian Orthodox Christians who don't think much of him at all, or others who are neutral on him, you don't have to say anything good about Vladimir Putin to say that the Russian people and Russian interests are not interested in seeing the Orthodox Christians of the Middle East massacred again, as many of them were in the ISIS horrors. So that was a long answer to your question. Did that help?
Well, give us a kind of the short list of the ghosts, your kind of the non-existent religion angles in that recent New York Times coverage. You kind of gave us the big picture, but what's your short list of the ghosts in that piece?
Well, the assumption was that Russia's interests in the Middle East were only economic and political. Now, I would never, ever deny that Russia has economic and political interest in the Middle East. I mean, everyone does, right? But at the same time, it was very strange to produce an entire lengthy story about Russia coming back into Syria in support of the current regime there and everything else. I thought it was very strange to write an entire story on that subject and not even mention the religion angle, which would be Russia's historic interest in trying to protect the Orthodox churches of Syria, you know, and other parts of that region. Now, once again, people say, oh, you know, they're really just interested in the money, or they just want the political power. I'm not denying that at all. I'm not denying that the geopolitical subjects are real. But I'm saying somewhere in there you have to mention that in Russia, the minute you had ISIS, you know, kind of making a move to be reborn, or you had the possibility of a Turkish invasion there, you have to mention that this poses a massive threat to Middle Eastern Christians, many of whom are Orthodox brothers and sisters of the Orthodox in Russia. I mean, that's at least worth a paragraph or two.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious ties between Russia and Syria on this Thursday, October the 31st. He is founder and editor of Get Religion and senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. Concordia Publishing House's annual Fall Warehouse Sale is both online and in-store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. November 1st through the 4th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's Fall Warehouse Sale, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's Fall Warehouse Sale, November 1st through the 4th.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit CUChicago lsms.edu/CALLA. That's CALLA.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday, October the 31st, we're talking about media coverage of religious ties between Russia and Syria. Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. Terry, I think this is a related problem, obviously, due to sometimes the failure of the press to cover these religion angles in these very complex geopolitical conflicts, the American people really end up on the short end of the stick, understanding very little of what Christians are actually going through over there. Talk about that.
Well, let me just give you an example. I'll give you a historical example, and then I'll put it into the present context. A decade or so ago, I was a part of a congregation in West Palm Beach, Florida. And that congregation, that Orthodox congregation, was, I would say, 70% Arabs and Lebanese, people who were either Palestinian or they had come from Lebanon. But the majority of the people who were from Lebanon were actually from Syria. And their ancestors had, at one time or another, been run out of the Nineveh Plains and other parts of Syria and Iraq by what amounts to previous versions of ISIS. These kinds of territorial and tribal fights among Arab tribes and Muslim, various radicalized forms of Islam, etc., this is not something new. I mean, the history books are packed with martyrs to previous versions of this. And many of the Arab Christians who live in the United States shake their heads looking at their newspapers that Americans think this is new somehow. Okay, so that's the historical context. This has been going on for a long time, and the Christian community of the Middle East just gets smaller and smaller. These numbers are off the top of my head, but I believe the Christian community in Iraq went from several hundred thousand down to now, I believe, somewhere in like the range of 25 to 50,000 Christians left. Now, I may be off on that. I apologize. I'm quoting from memory. But how many Americans realize that when ISIS was rolling through this biblical land, the Nineveh Plains and other parts of that region, that you had Christian communities and monasteries that were not just attacked, they were leveled, I mean, down to rubble. You were dealing, in some cases, of ancient sacred art that would date back to the 6th or 8th century, and there were libraries containing manuscripts that would go back to the 6th century or earlier. I mean, things that are global, priceless, irreplaceable, cultural treasures. Forget their religious significance for a second. Well, I would think that the destruction of those properties would merit quite a bit of coverage in the American media. And it received hardly any at all. I mean, here and there. Not the sort of thing that would let Americans realize the extent of the threat to the extinction of the church of the biblical regions of the Middle East. You throw in that other theological problem, which is that many evangelicals are much more interested for eschatological reasons with Israel and prophecies about the second coming and Left Behind and how many Israeli fighter jets can fight on the head of a pin in the book of Revelation. And you have all of that going on. I'm sorry to be kind of blunt about that. And they're forgetting that their own Christian brothers and sisters are dying and being pushed out of homes where they have lived for hundreds and hundreds of years. Now, the problem that many of those Christian brothers and sisters are Orthodox or various forms of Catholicism, churches related to the Catholicism of the West, that may complicate it, quite frankly. But the Christian communities of that region are ancient and incredibly complex. And as the Pope and Franklin Graham and all kinds of people have been saying for a long time, these churches are literally an endangered species in the body of Christ, to put Christian language on it. And for me, of course, they're my Orthodox co-believers. I mean, we're a part of the same ecclesiastical communion, so this feels very personal to me. So we're back to that paradox that you opened with, which is that we seem to have pretty decent religion coverage of a lot of different things in the world, especially when covering other world religions. And then we have just these very sharp, gaping holes where you're dealing with stories that are really, there are ghosts. I don't even think a lot of Americans realize the degree to which the Coptic Church of Egypt has been just under siege for the last decades. I mean, I guess Americans might be aware of a number of martyrs wearing bright orange jumpsuits being slaughtered on a beach in Libya. But, I mean, they're not aware that, I mean, there are people in buses trying to visit monasteries and being wiped out by Egyptian equivalents of ISIS. That might get a couple of inches of text back inside newspapers, but tragically, Americans are not that interested in foreign news anyway, and many of our editors are not that interested in religion news. So if you were trying to come up with a formula for bad religion coverage, I mean, news coverage of a subject, it would have to be religion on the other side of the world. That's the sort of thing that's not going to get into many ordinary American newspapers, let alone broadcast sites and coverage.
We've got about a minute and a half here, Terry. I'm not going to ask you to speculate as to whether or not Putin is a sincere believer, but I want to know what that man believes religiously, or at least what he says he believes. Is there any place I can go in the media to find out what Putin actually believes?
No, I don't think you can. You're going to get a lot of speculation from the Orthodox, both pro and con. I mean, he knows how to play on the Orthodox symbols of his country. So what I tell people, and you know, and I know people who have very strong beliefs, both pro and con, on that subject. I know people who can name for you what bishop is his confessor, and you know, and the whole bit, and that he is liturgically active, and then other people pointed his bad deeds, and all of that to me is interesting. I will just say this again. You don't have to believe a single positive thing about Putin to understand that it is in his interest, as the leader of the Russian people, to care about the future of the embattled minority churches of the Middle East. In other words, it is in his cultural interest, it's in his political interest, it's in his historical interest. He has every reason to be concerned about those churches because of the connections, Orthodox connections, and centuries of connections between Russia, the Slavic people, and the Middle East. So I hope that's a blunt question. I can't answer your question. I can only say, to understand his actions, you have to take that religion factor into account.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
Hour two of Issues, Etc. We return to our series on paths to Lutheranism during this Issues, Etc. Reformation Week. On this Reformation Day, we'll talk about the path from Calvinism to Lutheranism. Dr. Nancy Almodovar will be our guest. She's author of the book, The Accidental Lutheran, The Journey from Heidelberg to Wittenberg.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilken and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.